Thank you. Oh, I have some more notes for you. But just because I have notes doesn't mean you can't join in. Snicker, snicker. Oh, Nicodemus. What stood out the most for you in that particular reading? Okay, it was a good guess, but no. Going back into the mother's room, spirit. Anything in particular? Nobody ever gets it, so don't, you know. Yes. The born again piece, which we've heard many times from a different perspective. He comes to Jesus at night. Very first line. It makes you wonder about his fear of being seen by his colleagues, right? He's a high priest. He's pretty well known. You wonder what his friends and his colleagues would think, so that he could only come at night. Of course, there's a metaphor at work here also, that it comes by night means he came in the dark without an ability to see. And while Jesus tells him what must happen for him to see, to be born in the Spirit, free from the trappings of the world, he still doesn't quite get it. But there's that nagging question of why he came at night. Was it because he was afraid of being admonished by his peers, ashamed of seeing Jesus in a different way than he really wanted to, kind of being showed up a little bit by Jesus? Was he fearful that he might lose his status because he was sort of handing over some of his authority by asking Jesus questions? Was he worried that his position would be compromised if others found him out? Who knows? But in the next chapter we read, which we're going to do next week, the woman at the well, we have sort of the opposite thing that's going on here. She shows up with Jesus, and she doesn't run or hide and speaks out in the daylight. Now, does that mean that one is better than the other? Girls? No, I'm just kidding. I think it more or less just means that we are motivated sort of by our circumstance and our culture and our surroundings, aren't we? And that really determines how it is that we respond to certain events in our lives. So here we are on this next installment of the sin of shame. Why am I calling shame a sin? Yes, this is a quiz. There you go. If we identify that sin is fundamentally that which takes us from our beloved and each other, shame obviously does that. It's sort of the consummate example. We do need to be cautious, though, and I want to make sure I say this. If we understand that shame and sin remove us from God and one another, and that we also know that we feel shame deeply, maybe out of fear of being found out, there's the temptation then to kick ourselves while we're down, right? I feel shame, it scares me, but it's also a sin, therefore I feel more shame for the sin. I just proved the point, how unworthy I am, didn't I? This is not helpful. Don't go there. It's just necessary that we recognize that in our culture, there are lots of things that set us up to distance us from one another and from the divine. We have discussed how ridiculous some of the expectations are of how we are measured in our world. We look at our weight, money, prestige, power, housing status, jobs, looks, family, etc. But did you know that a lot of these expectations on how we should be in the world are, guess what? Gender biased. Did you know that? Now, as we begin to explore how shame is manifested differently by men and women, I need to add a disclaimer here, and this is very critical. Looking at gender from a male or female perspective is binary. you know what I mean by that? It's sort of this either or instead of both and anything that falls in between. So this conversation is a general and historical look, so keep that in mind. It also doesn't look at race, age, generation, queer or not, socioeconomic status, etc. All of these other identifying markers lurk behind this conversation, however, so keep them in mind. And they can really intensify feelings of shame on top of how we as men or women seem to integrate the concept or the experience of shame. For the sake of this initial part, we're going to look specifically at male or female, and I think you'll see how other things emerge from that. I know this is starting to sound a little bit like psychology, isn't it? It is. And the reason why we're doing it in church would be what? I can start from the first sermon all over again if that would be helpful, really. I don't mind. We are beings of mind, body, spirit, aren't we? And so we can't take one from the other. We are interblended with mind, body, spirit. That is what makes us whole. Women tend to eternalize blame and frustration, and I would add shame, while men tend to externalize it through acts of aggression. This was a statement that was made by a gentleman named Eric Mathis, who's an associate professor at the Criminal Justice Department at the University of Washington, Tacoma. And he made that statement right after the shooting in Las Vegas. I'll read it again. Women tend to internalize blame and frustration and shame, while men tend to externalize them through acts of aggression. Women, jump in if I miss something, or if you want to add something. Men, you can too. Women, historically, tend to turn shame towards themselves. Yes? Yes. We tend to see a manifestation of depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety disorders, addiction, eating disorders, suicide, persistent victims of abuse, but also can be abusers, and mental disorders in general. Those who are abused, especially as children, assume that they are the ones responsible for the abuser's rage. And if we're thinking that, then we must think that we are deserving of the abuse. The abuse causes more shame and therefore reinforces the shame and isolation. And there's a variety of abuses. There's emotional, physical, sexual. But the abuser is also more times at not experiencing shame too. Now, barring personality disorders, and I won't bore you with that too much, personality disorders robs one of remorse, responsibility, or empathy. So I'm not putting that person in that perspective. The abuser is also caught up in a cycle of shame. Addictions or substance abuse can further add to this cycle. And like the chicken and the egg, it's hard to know what comes first. Shame, abuse, addiction, abuse, shame, or somewhere in between. Yes? Yes. Women tend to strive to reach unattainable goals, goals that they do not set, that we do not set for ourselves, but are often set for us by our culture. Again, weight, look, status, parenting, wifely duties. And these are sort of all transient, aren't they? Because the expectations that folks have or that we have of ourselves is usually as transient as the fashion that changes every year. One moment you think you know what your expectation is, and the next moment it may change. How would you define femininity? Femininity, being a woman, how would you define it? Lace, pearls, and perfume. What about heels? Oh, yeah. Okay, thank you. I know you don't believe that for a second, but I see your point. Anybody else? Feelings caretaking. That's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Okay. Anybody else? 1950s housewife. Yeah, I see that. No, no, it's okay. But it lingers, doesn't it? Anything else? Yes. Wisdom. Okay. The rest of the women in here buying that? Okay. Who said not necessarily? Really? You're not buying wisdom? Not for everyone. Okay. Okay.
Caring.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Progressive women. I'm going to put you on the spot. You know what it means to be a progressive woman in the world and in this space. What are some of those old school thoughts that still sort of undermine your progressive way of being in the world? Aaron. Wow, you go right to it. Making sure dinner's ready at a certain time. Okay. What else?
Putting effort into being attractive.
What's that?
Putting effort into being attractive.
Outside appearances. Maggie.
Being quiet.
Being quiet. Submissive. Can I add that? Because neither one really works for you, so I thought I would throw them both together. Losing one's voice or not being allowed to have a voice. Okay, great. What else? Anybody else? From your experience, what are some of those old school? Yes?
Putting yourself last.
Any other woman in here ever feel like that? Oh, if your hands are down, you're so full of it. What's that?
Feeding the baby.
Oh, you can't raise your hand. You're feeding the baby. I was going to say... But Dawn, that's not old school. That's kind of necessary. All right, what were we going to say? Oh. So. Oh. I know. I'm trying to stay. Squirrel. Okay, anybody else? Old school stuff. Yeah.
Career choices.
What do you mean by that, career choices? Or a stewardess.
Yes. Stewardess.
Yeah. Or a nun.
Certainly not CEO. You know, that one for now. But even CEO, no.
Okay, so does that still undergird things now, do you think? Does any of these old school, from a personal perspective, undermine your sense of being in the world as a woman? Just hold on to that. There is an old commercial for Anjali. You know what I'm talking about? If Lori were here right now, she would have broken into song. Do you know what the song is? I can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, and never ever let you, 'cause I'm a... Right, that's never been my experience, but I think you understand. Boy, talk about another double-edged sword, right? You can't do just one of those correctly, you have to do it all. And if you don't, then are you really being and meeting the expectations of the woman as it is supposed to be? Okay, double the work and half the pay. Our culture continuously repeats, working women are abandoning their men and children. Yes?
Yeah.
Even now? Yes. They're the reason for broken homes and messed up kids. Yes? Yes. The mixed message of what it means to be successful, equal, independent woman is held up and against what we expect of men, at the same time knocked down by an archaic idea of what true womanhood looks like. Yes? Issues of working, parenting, birth control, abortion, glass ceilings get played out in the public forum. To this day, to this minute. Yes? Yes. Is there shame involved with that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is. Amy Dellinger is a professor of sociology at the Appalachian State University in North Carolina. Now, she defines a concept called toxic masculinity. Basically, she said, men, So men, you can join in now. You're making my point. Are basically not allowed to express their full range of emotions. Not to mention that the language that we have is limited to what is emotional and what is feeling, according to women. So even the language we use makes men look like girls if they use that language. You're so gay is a term that gets thrown out in middle schools and high schools all the time when boys try to express their emotions. She states that this binary idea of what it means to be male or female puts both genders at odds with one another from the beginning. Women can express feelings with men, but for men to do it, it becomes emasculating. And if a man uses the same language to express himself that is used by a woman, he is also identified as feminine. Because after all, boys don't cry, right? How fair is that? Blogger and husband Andy Hines in the 2013 Atlantic magazine actually uses Brené Brown and quotes, "The antidote to crippling shame is vulnerability and empathy." How many men in here feel okay to express vulnerability and empathy? It's tough, isn't it? We tend to think of vulnerability as a weakness, but in fact, it is the highest form of courage. And to admit fear and pain, to reach out for others for help, to quiet the gremlins that tell us to keep our mouths shut and soldier on, this is how we become engaged and make connections. Vulnerability and shame are gendered. Weakness is shameful. Who do you think is the greatest perpetrator, according to research, of keeping men in that place of feeling shameful for expressing their feelings? Church? Who said women? You're right. Why do you think? Such as? That's right. That's right. So while we're caught up in our stuff, we project onto, I want to hear your feelings. Oh, but not those. Man up. You should be stronger than this. Right? Is that shameful? Absolutely. It feels shameful. She puts it right to it. Women perpetuate this unfair assessment of masculinity with men in their lives when they tend to be repelled when men show chinks in their armor. And at that point, she screams out, Brené Brown, oh my God, I am the patriarchy, because she is saying that she is perpetuating this terrible idea of toxic masculinity. There's a lot that's been going around with the recent shootings. And with these recent shootings, there's been a resurgence to understand why acts of aggression are carried out more by men than women. Have you ever thought about that? I bet the women have. Clinical psychologist Michael Thompson, who wrote the book Raising Cain, says that since Columbine, this has become a major focus. Ironically, he states that while violent crime in general has dramatically decreased over the past 30 years, except for these symbolic shootings. So crime itself has decreased, violent crime, but these shootings have increased. And he said what this states unequivocally is that our boys are neglected and hurting. They are unable to negotiate the strong feelings they have for fear of being emasculated. Whew, talk about shame, right? Whew. Comedian Ian Black used to have this one-liner that he would use in his stand-up routine. If you want to emasculate a guy friend, when you're at a restaurant, ask him everything that he's going to order, and then when the waitress comes, order for him. It's funny, because it shouldn't be that easy to rob a man of his masculinity. So ironically, what a man would do in a restaurant to order for a woman, if you did it for a man, something that simple could be emasculating. Wow. Are we pitted against one another or what? Right? Judy. Absolutely in defense of men. Yes. Yes. Why do you think we're doing that? Do you? Ah, revenge. Okay. Revenge, taking power, stuff rolling downhill. Now you know what it feels like, right? I'm not saying it's fair. I'm just saying here's what we've got going.
We've lost respect for each other.
We've lost respect for each other. And we're both ashamed because of it, aren't we? Isolation, yes. That's right. And women internalize and get sicker and sicker and sicker, and men externalize and get more and more violent. Now, don't get me wrong. Obviously, this is a vast generalization, and I know that. Okay? But we have set up a paradigm here where women should be ashamed if they want to be stronger, and men should be stronger by equality of power, and men should feel ashamed if they want to be stronger in their bodies and their emotions. Wow. That hurts, doesn't it? Ian goes on to say that too many boys are trapped in the same suffocating, outdated model of masculinity where manhood is measured in strength, where there's no way to be vulnerable without being emasculated, where manliness is about having power over others so we dumb them down so we can have power over them. They're trapped and they don't even have the language to talk about how they feel being trapped, because the language that exists to discuss the full range of human emotion is still viewed as sensitive and feminine. Damned if you do and damned if you don't. Women do have an advantage. This is the weird advantage. When you sit in a place of being less than or oppressed, and you are coming into power, you suddenly have the empowerment from one another. If you are a place where you haven't had to do that, and now you are being deemed the enemy, how painful is that when you are doing the best that you can in this world? Our boys are hurting, and our women are hurting, and our girls are hurting, and our men are hurting. It's hard to know for both how we are to be defined. And we are so worried about how others are going to define us and see us in the light that we do most things in the dark, right? We ask the questions in the dark and we do it secretly and we don't want anybody to hear us. And really, we want to walk away in the dark too, as if the conversation never had it happened. It is a tough place to be. We are really back to that idea of connectivity and belonging, aren't we? That notion of just craving to be a part of a community and to be a part of one another's lives without the fear of being found out, without the fear and the shame that you might think less of me because I'm this or that. And it's because of our own shame that we withdraw. And it's almost impossible to hear what each other's pain then can be. If we understand all the ways we perpetuate our own feelings of shame, how we deflect our feelings, and how we define one another in terms of how we think another should be, then maybe we can move from the place of shame to a place of being able to share and listen to one another with greater ease and empathy. This is no small task. Realizing our shame and our own complicity in promoting expectations and false identities of others that can perpetuate their shame can make us feel very shameful. And this is where forgiveness, empathy, and vulnerability come into play. And that is another sermon. So two things. One, next week we'll have a lot more fun in church with the sermon, I promise. It won't be as just something a little uplifting that will demonstrate some of the things that we're talking about, but in a way that sort of eases us a little bit. And the other thing I want to offer you is this. Marianne Williamson is a spiritual teacher. She has written many books, not the least of which is A Return to Love, Reflection on the Principles of A Course in Miracles. Now here's what she has to say in terms of the other side of this shame coin. She says, our deepest fear is not actually that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all of us, meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just some of us, it is everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we are unconsciously giving other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear and our own shame, our presence automatically liberates others. Amen.